Blog Talk Radio. Of applause. Yeah, I love it. Welcome, people, to She's Raising the Bar, Blog Talk Radio. Happy to have you with us. We love the company. We really love the company. West Coast base, people listening on the West Coast, 10 o'clock there. So I'm saying, good morning. Raise a glass of orange juice with us. My East Coast base, well, we could have a little something. We could have a little glass of wine. It's 1 o'clock here. We could do that. But UK base, we can definitely raise a glass of whatever the hell you want. It's 6 o'clock there. Welcome, people. Thank you so much for joining us. It's just a wonderful day. It's Pride Month. It's one of these days that you know it's just magic. And that's what we're celebrating. So welcome, people. Thank you for joining us. 10 years on the air. So we're happy to be there, and we're happy for all the people that joined us. And people that left us, we hope that you come back. But the people that joined us, we love being with you, and we love the fact that you're interacting with us. So thank you for joining us. This is Pride Month, and I'm going to... I have to do this. I can't help myself. In Pride Month, I'm going to also announce what we have reason not to be proud of. I want to say thank you to the Republican Party for creating a filibuster for women's equal pay. So thank you. I don't want to say boys because there were girls there too. Thank you so much for denying women equal pay as women. God bless you all. And you know what? I always say, karma is a bitch. And with this choice, you are going to be having to sit listening to your daughters, your granddaughters, your sisters, your wives, talking to you about this guy down the aisle, this guy in the cubicle, making twice as much as you make, and you have a master's degree. This is what you're fighting against. So God bless you. God keep you. And karma is going to find its way into your household. So I don't hold hate in my heart. That's fine. But thank you for doing this, because you know, it's going to be something that lands on your doorstep, and you're going to be dealing with it longer than we are. That's all I'm saying. In saying that, today, my guest for the next 3 weeks is Alexis Hunter, who is the author of the book, Joy Lansing, A Body to Die For. And she and I are going to be Siskel and Ebert. We're going to be the critics of different films to different films that actually represented the gay lifestyle. And I'm going to go one step beyond that, because The Celluloid Closet is a book that I actually read many, many, many years ago. And it's so funny, speaking with a lot of friends of mine, the lesbian community is never, ever represented. It's always invisible. As far as the gay prism, it's always underserved. So we're going to be talking about different movies that were supposed to platform, support, and just create an environment for a lifestyle of change that shouldn't be created. It shouldn't be encapsulated as a lifestyle change, but this is what we're doing. And Alexis, you're on board. How are you, darling?
I'm doing great, Lori. So nice to be on your show.
This is great, right?
Yeah.
This is gonna be. I see this because you and I know each other. I see this veering here, veering there, and hopefully we land where we have to land.
Well, at least we'll get close, okay? That's all that matters, Lori.
Yeah, it is what it is. But you have, your book is doing a re-release for marriage equality. It's 10 years that we're celebrating, at least on the East Coast, marriage equality. And your book is enjoying a re-release next week, June 24th, with cheers, different inserts. Tell us a little bit about that.
Lori, I am so excited about it. My publisher, Ben Omart with Bare Matter Media, has agreed to re-release the book in honor of Pride and Marriage Equality. And what I've done is, added a few more things to the book. I added basically a little chapter because after the book was released, people kept saying, well, what happened to you? What happened to Stan? What happened here?
Yeah.
What happened there? And, the book kind of left people up in the air. Well, I've addressed all that. I've answered those questions. So I think people will like that. And I was so fortunate, Lori. Joy's niece and nephew reached out to me, found me on Facebook, and I hadn't spoke. I knew of them, but I hadn't had any contact with them since Joy died. And they had magnificent photos of Joy and pictures of Joy and me together. These pictures were lost for 50 years.
Wow.
And so they're going to be in the re-release of the book. And if anybody ever questions the validity of my relationship with Joy, this will kind of cinch it. So I'm so excited.
And obviously people have questioned it, if you're saying that.
Sure. Yeah, not many people. Yeah. Most people, realize that, what I said in the book, the way I spoke about Joy, that they knew that I loved her and they knew that we had a relationship. But, for any doubter out there, the photos are so beautiful, Lori, so beautiful.
Yeah.
There are two great photos of Joy and me together.
Yeah.
So I'm so jazzed.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of it. When people open their minds, and I always say when people say the good old days, I always say the good old days were the 50s. If you were Protestant and white male, what are you talking about, the good old days? There was no such thing as the good old days. There was a lot of oppression. So this kind of relationship couldn't exist. Openly, it existed.
No.
It couldn't exist openly. And that's why I always say, what are you thinking when you're watching Leave It to Beaver and you're saying this was the good old days? Freaking no. Come on, are you kidding me?
Maybe for them, maybe for the Beaver.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, no, you know what? I could roll that into something else, but I'm not going to do it. You know me. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to leave it alone.
No. The people picked it up. Okay. So I'll be good, I promise. I'll keep it clean.
Don't be good. We have an R rating. It's okay. Don't worry about
it. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
But,
it's safe.
Yeah, things sucked. Things sucked in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s. I mean, when I was with Joy, I had to pretend to be her sister. If I hadn't, her career would have tanked. It would have been all over the papers, and her reputation would have been destroyed. It would have been catastrophic. So luckily, we were both blonde, we both green eyes, so we could, you know, pretend.
Yeah.
And the most, I mean, I think most people bought it, so that was a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And the shame is that you had to resort to that, you know. But again, when people say, no change has happened, it has happened. Because anytime I watch TV, and you and I have discussed this, and I see a same-sex couple or a biracial couple with kids, change has happened. You know, it might not be as quickly as we want, but it did, because now all of a sudden we're sitting in front of the screen, which most of us are sitting in front of too often, and we're watching these things, and then all this different dynamic is infused.
Right.
Same sex, biracial, it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Oh, it's fabulous. I mean, I never thought that I would envision seeing a commercial with two women together or two guys together or, you know, family units, because we are families. We have families.
Yeah.
It's probably trite at this moment. Everybody says it, but love is love. You know, it doesn't matter who you love. As long as you love somebody or something or, you know, or love your dog or your pet. But I'm so grateful that things have changed. I mean, there are still people that tolerate us, gay people, and I hate the word. I hate tolerance. I don't want to be tolerated by anybody. I want somebody to try and be a little compassionate and understanding, not to just bite their lip, and being afraid of saying something that is unpopular. That's what I hoped with my book, that people would understand. A relationship between two women or two men or a man and a woman or whatever. You know, if you love someone and you're there for them, that's what's important. Being there, being there and loving them. You know, when things aren't so great.
And you know, I think that's the most important import of your book, and I've read it. There's four different veneers that I would market from this book, but it's just, you know, again, it's empowering of same-sex couples, but then again, it's also bringing to the forefront how women still are and certainly were more in the 50s. They were subject to such diabolical treatment of Hollywood.
Oh my God, yes.
It just you know, makes you think, what were we, you know, surrendering to? And that's what most women did. It was because men said it was okay.
Right.
And I think that's what takeaway from your book, in addition to it being a wonderful love story, but it's how Hollywood dissected women to what they wanted to be presented and eventually killed them. And that's really it.
Somebody always had to die. That was the tragedy. Of cinema. During that time, you know, they briefly addressed it, you know, but skewed it to a moralistic slapdown. It was kind of a slapdown, you know, like, you can do what you're going to do, you know, if you want to be a little bit weird, whatever, but eventually you're going to pay for it. And then if you can do the right thing, you can go off with the male hero.
And this is why you and I are going to discuss, we're going to roll up our sleeves, and we're going to tackle this. Today we're going to talk about, I think, two films that, and you introduced me to The Fox, but mm-hmm. I always remember The Children's Hour since I was probably about 8. And the thing I want to say about The Children's Hour, and I have to say, I remember seeing it on a black and white TV, probably 19, I was born in 1962, so probably 1969, I was probably 7. And my mother was she was a single mother, so she had to take up 2 spaces. She was absolutely wonderful in making sure that we got the best education on humanity that we could get. And you remember when TV guides were like this big thick book that was like a paperback.
Oh yeah.
And she would, my brother and I should say. And mm-hmm. I remember The Children's Hour being coming up so many times, but it was a lot. Most of the time it wasn't that any night that I could stay up and see it. But I remember one time, and I was probably 8 or 9 years old, it was at 11 o'clock, and anybody who's listening now probably doesn't realize if they're under 20, if they're 20 or above, that stations didn't have any type of films running after, you know what I'm saying, after 12 o'clock. That was at the Honeymooners, and that was it. So
yeah, you had that weird thing on the screen.
Yeah, we had the pattern. Right, we had that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I remember her watching. She said, I want you to watch this with me. And my mother, when I meet her at the end of the road, when my life ends, I'm always going to say to her, you really rocked. Because when I was a kid, you didn't appreciate this. As an adult, I do. She made me watch this, and my mother was wonderful. She really was. She was the typical Aquarian who was progressive, all about humanity. And she made me watch this with her, and my mother didn't speak during the show, but at certain points she would hold my shoulder. And she would then discuss it with me later. If it was too late, it was the next day.
Wow.
But The Children's Hour was probably the pivotal film in my life. And I think the thing that I remember most about it, without saying anything about the ending for people who were listening and not knowing the whole storyline, my mother gave it permission to exist. She didn't tell me, well, girls, boys could love boys. She didn't. She just said, this is a love story, and it was brought about by rumor. She didn't say anything about it couldn't, it shouldn't. She didn't create categories. She gave it permission to exist. And I got it. She was. And I got it. And my brother got it.
Ah.
And this was 1961.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this was, I want to get the credits right. This was 1961. And it was released in the UK. And I like this title better. The Loudest Whisper. I think that was probably something that was a little bit more powerful. It should have been released as that here. I love it.
Yeah,
and it was the screenplay by John Michael Hayes, Lillian Hellman, who I loved. She created the story, 1934. Bay Banter was, oh my God, she was the grandmother in this, and that was, I think she died, probably 6 months after this. Karen Balkin, who was the little girl who was just wonderful in this and didn't really go on to much. And, it just was just this wonderful, wonderful film that you could just sit down and just discuss.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's so many different layers to it.
Yeah. When was the first time you saw it?
Gosh, probably in the 60s. I believe I saw it in the 60s. I saw it at parents' home. They didn't watch it. My parents were very much, I mean, they never discussed homosexuality, really. It was sort of like it didn't exist, you know. They were not, the only thing is the weirdest thing, one time I was watching TV with my father, and there was one of the first TV movies was on about, I can't remember the title of it, but it was about a man finding out his son was gay, and you know what happened. I wish I could remember the title, but I remember vividly at the end of the movie, my father said to me, if that were my son, I would want him dead.
Oh.
Yeah. So, needless to say, I didn't come out. I did not come out. But my father, you know, he may have said that, but when Joy was ill and he came to see me, he was very loving, and I think he was very much aware. And he was very kind to me, very, very kind to me. So I think that was just his initial reaction. And in reality, the fact that he loved me was more important. So that's where it's at.
It's not a funny story, but it's kind of a comical story. My father-in-law, who I love dearly, passed March 17th, and my husband and I would go to his you know, he was nursing home, and we'd watch TV with him. And you know how it is when you're watching TV with older people. There's going to be something that's embarrassing. So
of
we're
course.
Sitting there and we're watching. Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there. I'm watching couples kissing. And I'm watching, and I said, "Oh, this is probably going to go to a very bad place." You just know. Then all of a sudden, two guys are kissing. And I had gotten my father-in-law. He loved these lotto tickets, and he would scratch away.
And
we're watching this, and he's looking at me, "What the hell is this? Are you kidding me?"
Oh,
I said, "Keep scratching, Pop. Keep scratching, Pop. Don't look at the." And he was just, and that's just the way it is. His mind could not accept it.
He was
a loving person, but he just couldn't get that. And I remember John looking at me, and I'm looking at him, and it's like, this is going to be bad. And, you know, just make the best of it. But you can't translate the dialogue to somebody who just doesn't get it. You just can't.
No, it's the way they were raised. I mean,
you
know, it's just something that just should not exist. Could not exist. I mean, this is an aberration.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
And they just don't get it. And luckily, younger people, thank God, are much more open-minded. At least not on the East Coast and the West Coast for sure. But hopefully, in some young people, you know, are coming more accepting.
Yeah. So I think you're right. Yeah. I always said the second generation, the third generation that we have, probably won't be the movers and the shakers, and they're certainly not going to be capitalists, but they're a product of accepting religion, culture,
and
love. And I think that, you know, as a planet, I think we're going to profit from that. I think so.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so. I can't remember, I mentioned to you, one of the highlights of my life, especially with the book, is there was a teacher who read my
mm-hmm.
book. She taught English and taught the International Baccalaureate kids, seniors. I mean, these kids are the cream of the crop. Wonderful. And she read it, and she made arrangements with the school system to have my book in their curriculum. And it just blew me away.
So
the kids had to read my book and another book and had to do a paper about it, which they did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would go and speak to them. And we did a Q&A. And my God, these kids were so wonderful, so open-minded. Nothing was out of bounds. They were allowed to ask me anything. And my God, they were so open and so loving. I was lucky enough to read all their papers, and I wrote back to them. You know, I would write probably just as much as they wrote, maybe even a little bit more, but it blew my mind. And the kids became so much more open and compassionate and realizing how much the value of love. There was no stigma, no attitude. It was all just so absolutely loving. And I'll never be the same. I mean, it makes me want to cry because it was so great to me.
No.
And I would love to talk to more kids. I'd love to, you know, if they would, some schools, I'm talking about seniors, not younger than that, because I think the book's a little too mature. But a senior,
of course.
If you can go in the military the next year, you know, you should be able to read a book.
I think so. I certainly think so. Absolutely. Yeah. This is, you know, again, this is dialogue that should be, you know, of permission. It doesn't mean that, you know, again, you have to sign on to anything, but it's an open dialogue. And I think that most people should want their children enriched to different areas of culture and lifestyle. And I hope that we're entering that. I really hope we are.
I hope so. And from what I saw, with these kids, kids are listening. They're realizing, you know, that a lot of the stuff that they were taught when they were younger is a lot of crap. And they're rising above it. They're aware. That term that everybody's using now is they're woke. They are woke. And they are aware of what's right and what's truly wrong with our society. And I think they're gonna fight against it. They're a lot wiser and for their years than so many people.
And you know what? What's interesting? I remember when I was having lunch. John and I were having lunch with one of my goddaughters, and this is probably, my God, had to be 11 years ago. Yeah. And we were in a restaurant, and she said, "Oh, that's so-and-so and his boyfriend." And I was like, "Oh, yeah? He's got a boyfriend?" And she said, "Oh, yeah, Aunt Lori," because she's, you know, of course, I have to be square. She said, "Oh, yeah, Aunt Lori, he's got this, you know, Aunt Lori's this old thing." But, and she explained to me that they're together as a couple, and I was like, really? You know, again, she's explained to me, and I'm just happy that she has the power to do that. And I realize this, at the time she was probably, oh my God, probably 17 years old.
Wow.
And she's explaining to me that they're a couple. And I said, you know what? We're here. This is cool. This is fine.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That is
so
great.
It was wonderful. And I lived upstate at the time, which is not exactly Manhattan. So the fact that it happened there, I was thrilled.
Oh, my God. That is fabulous.
Yeah. I didn't care if it was the old fought aunt. You know, I didn't care. But she was telling me about a friend of hers that was in the same sex. And I just thought, that was wonderful. That was wonderful.
Yeah, matter of fact, sort of a matter of fact thing, not like, oh, my
yeah.
God. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Weird, but, you know, or no, that is great.
I loved it. What I want to talk to you about is I want to talk about the Children's Hour, and then we're going to talk about the Fox. But
right.
I have, again, the Children's Hour is probably one of my go-to films. I just think it was just wonderfully directed by, I think it was William Wyler. He was just absolutely wonderful. You had a cast of Audrey Hepburn. You had Shirley MacLaine. You had Faye Banta. You had everybody there.
Yeah, James Garner.
And James Garner, yes. When all of them came and said in interviews that they didn't know what the story was about, I'm thinking, are you kidding me? You're sitting there around a table and you're reading a script. You're in your 30s. You're not getting, we didn't know what the story was about. I have a hard time with that.
I think they did. They just didn't want to cop to it because it might have cast a shadow on them, you know, if they were pro, you know, they could not admit that they were pro homosexuality because then there would be rumors, you know, if you like that or you accept it, then maybe you're one of those folks. You know, it was such a stigma. Terrible. So they had to really watch what they said. It's sad.
Yeah.
Very sad.
It is. Because anytime I hear that, I'm thinking of Audrey Hepburn was seasoned, as was Shirley MacLaine and James Garner. How could you possibly say you didn't know what the content of the storyline was? It's crazy.
Yeah.
It was 1961. I totally get it.
Yeah. No, they were just trying to, the old CYA, you know, they were trying to just you know, they were tiptoeing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not have that shadow cast upon them. They couldn't do it. You know, you have to be very, very careful. Yeah, especially
now
in children's
book. Now, in saying that, and you and I could go back and forth with this, this was 1961, and I'm not going to be a spoiler alert. It's a lot of stuff happens, but Audrey Hepburn she walks away an identity. She walks away as a single being.
Right.
Whereas, The Fox, which, and you turned me on to this, I watched again. This was something that I thought, and you tell me differently, I think it was a harsher representation of the culture.
Yes.
Because Sandy Dennis, look, I love Sandy Dennis. May her soul rest in peace. She played the same part all the time. And I said when I was watching this, I would have killed her myself. But that's Sandy Dennis. But the storyline was something that was coming of resolution in a very different way than I think the Children's Hour ended the way I would have wanted to write it.
Yes.
What do you think?
No, I agree with you totally. After the death of Shirley MacLaine, her conversation with James Garner was, she was denying having any kind of relationship. You know, romantic relationship with Shirley MacLaine because she didn't. Shirley MacLaine was in love with her. But because of the rumor, the little bratty kid started a rumor, you know, they were kissing or whatever. And so she could not believe that James Garner did not believe her. He always questioned it. He doubted it.
He did.
And because he doubted it, she wasn't going to go there. He didn't trust her. And how can you have a relationship with someone who doesn't trust you, doesn't believe you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally get it. And the empowering thing about, again, 1961, and people haven't seen the movie. I don't want to spoil it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pertinent to our conversation. Shirley Audrey Hepburn walked away from him.
Yes. Yes.
Whereas it's very different in The Fox.
You
get where she's, you know, mourning the loss of her love, but there's nothing empowering about it. It's just a loss.
No. It's just a loss, and then she goes merrily off on her way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the way Hollywood had wanted it, you know. You can't have a happy lesbian relationship or homosexual relationship.
No.
Somebody's going to die. Something terrible's got to happen to one of them because it's a no-no. You have to be punished. And that's what was prevalent in Hollywood, you know, punish them, you know, make it so that it will discourage anyone, you know. Well, this is a message to you. Don't be doing that or bad things are going to happen to you, you know.
Right.
I mean, that's my take from it.
And I remember watching The Children's Hour. Again, and this was back in the day where they didn't cut things. I'm sure I watched it on Channel 11 or Channel 9. And I remember, and this is the brilliance of great directors. You don't need blood. Mm-hmm. You don't need car crashes.
Uh-uh.
You just need to have shadows and, you know, implication.
Right.
And I remember seeing the shadow of Shirley MacLaine hanging.
Yes.
And that's all you needed. You didn't see
my
her.
Whoa.
And
that was
powerful. Oh, are you kidding me? That was the best.
Oh, my God.
As horrible as it was, that was the movie. And you didn't have to, you didn't need anything more than that.
No.
That was all as incidental and as powerful as it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll never forget when my mother didn't speak during the movie. She put her hand on my shoulder and kept it there when she knew that scene was coming up. And then we discussed it. But it wasn't happening during the movie. But I'll never forget that. It was just amazing.
Wow. What a great mom. What a great mom.
She really was. She really was. She really was. Like I said, when I meet her at the end of the road, I'll tell her that. But of course, when you're, you know, a teenager and you're butting heads with your mother because that's what you do as a teenager. But again, I had such a wonderful array of art that was given to me and talked about. The dialogue was open. So, and all these wonderful films were just at 8 years old and as 58 years old, you start pulling from it and just saying, my God, this was a great thing that we had. And you use it to fuel it forward.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing that you had that kind of upbringing because so many people did not. And people take on their parents' prejudices. And we're not born with attitude or prejudice or hatred in our heart. We have to learn that crap. And I'm so happy that you had that wonderful mom.
Yeah. I'm grateful now. Of course, you know, you don't appreciate it back then, but
of course
certainly now, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah, the Children's Hour impacted me. You know, it was like, wow. I mean, I could identify with Shirley MacLaine because, you know,
mm-hmm.
as a kid, you know, of course I had crushes mm-hmm. on this girl or that girl or this teacher or whatever.
And I
could relate to her. I could understand that she was in love with Audrey Hepburn. I got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then it was just like, oh no, how awful.
Yeah. And you know, again, it wasn't a film about same sex love. It was about how rumors could kill people.
And they do.
Yeah. And I remember when I had a niece who was. She was in theater in New Jersey, and she played the younger woman who Karen Balkle, who is still with us. If she's listening to the show, you did a wonderful job. But she didn't do too much after this. And she's saying, Aunt Laurie, this is a great blah 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 blah. It's not just about same-sex love. It's about how rumors could damage lives.
Yeah.
And she was wonderful in it.
Wow. Yeah, rumors. Yeah, that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that brings it all back to, you know, my relationship with Joy. We had to be so
mm-hmm.
careful that there weren't rumors, because talk about destructive.
Yeah.
I mean, and we didn't hang out. We didn't go to parties or any of that stuff because there was always someone hitting on her or hitting on me. And
that had to be hard. Oh, my God. That had to be hard. Yeah.
Yeah. So we stayed pretty much to ourselves. You know, we were big on watching TV or going up to dinner. That was our sport. And if anybody's read the book, they know that we, you know, there was a lot of food involved.
You know, it's funny because I always think, and I don't want to be a snob about it, but I always think that anything that cool that happened in the city happened on the West Side. And
mm-hmm.
I think I told you this the last time you were on the show, and I've spoken about it. A place that I had my business for 21 years was one of the hot spots for cabaret for a lesbian grouping. And
oh my
it was
God.
139. Yeah, it was Vivi's Rooftop, and it was the penthouse of 139 East 57th Street. And I'll tell you why this happened. I remember I was written up in my business was written up in a magazine, and somebody said to me, "Was that Madame Spivey's club?" And I said, "I don't know what you're talking about." And he wrote back, and he said, "It was a bar. Liberace played there. Blah 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 blah." And I said, "You know what? I'm here 20 years. I would certainly know about it." So my husband, in his wisdom, said, "You know something? You don't know everything. Why don't you just look into it?" And I did. And I got New York Times pictures, and
God.
It was this lesbian hotspot. It was cabaret, and it was in a penthouse on the East Side where nothing cool ever happened. I don't want to say anything bad, but and there was two baby grand pianos. Madame Spivey had hers, and Walter Liberace had one behind her. And you had Carol Channing, Tallulah Bankhead. Everybody was there till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh,
and I always think to myself, do you think that would have been great? And I said to myself, you know what? I was there 20 years. Just crazy rent. And I said, you know what? That's worth me staying here another 10 years. It was
absolutely
just so friggin' cool.
Cool.
Are you kidding me?
So cool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, during those days, everything had to be underground. You could not, because it was illegal.
That's exactly right.
If I went to, there were no or very few lesbian bars in L.A. when I came
mm-hmm.
out. And there was a god-awful place called The Mint in a crap part of L.A. on Pico. And I, you know, I heard about it, and I went there, and it was just a dive. And you had to be so careful because the police would come in, and they would raid the place.
Mm.
And it, everything was no touch. And I'm not talking about sexually.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't hold somebody's
mm-hmm.
hand. I couldn't put my hand on someone's shoulder. Couldn't kiss somebody on the cheek.
God.
They could arrest
yeah.
you, and they did. You always had to worry, you know. So the smart people, especially people with means, would go to, like, Madame Spivey's, you know, and
mm-hmm.
they felt
yeah.
safe there. It was safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You couldn't be
yeah.
arrested. I mean, you know, because they controlled their environment. So that's dynamite. That's so cool.
And you know something? I looked at my blueprints when I rented the place, and I looked at the blueprints then, and I'm thinking, how do they have two baby grand friggin' pianos?
Yeah.
How did that happen? And yet it did. It did.
Wow.
And again, it wasn't underground, and it wasn't on the west side, and it existed for about probably 11 years. And everything happened.
God.
It would go to 4 o'clock in the freaking morning, and it was just
yeah.
wonderful. And Matt,
did you ever
Matt
find
and
out?
Could,
yeah.
Pardon?
Did you ever talk to find out who frequented the place? You said Tallulah Bankhead and Carol Channing. Did you ever hear who else might have been there?
Liberace, everybody else who was in, you know, I'm trying to think, I could probably look at the names, but it was everybody who was out then. Or just, yeah, and it was just great. And people would show up and it would close up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I remember because my office was the whole floor. And there was this rickety elevator that took everybody up there, and it would break down occasionally. And I said, my God, that's my elevator, who always breaks down
God.
On paying freaking rent. But
I
it was it. Wonderful. It was wonderful.
So cool, Lori.
And there was a terrace that people would go out and they would drink, and it was just a wonderful thing. And I was so happy that I was part of that in some way, you know. It was just cool stuff.
Ah, that's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. What a great story.
Yeah. And it, you know, the funny thing about that was when I first found out about that was probably like, oh my God, probably 7 years ago. And my
uh-huh.
sisters at the time, I love jazz, and I love old standards. And I was sitting there, we were going over stuff, and I was sitting there with her, and I was saying, do you understand what happened around here? Do you understand the enormity of the music that was playing around here?
Uh-huh.
And she said, you're not getting. It's still here. You're playing it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my
and
God.
I was like, ooh, and I just sat there quiet. I was like, yeah, you're right. So she said, this is energy that's just being transposed. So that's a cool thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was there for 21 years, yes.
Wow, that is fabulous. What a great story. How
it
exciting.
It is a cool
because,
story.
I mean, I wasn't aware of that. I had no idea. I knew that, they had private clubs. You know, people would get together.
Mm-hmm.
They'd talk to each other, and then they would get together in someone's home,
yeah.
usually. And
yeah,
just on the old down low. Everybody had to be on the down low. You couldn't, people couldn't find out. You find out, you lose your job. You could go to jail. I mean, it was awful, just awful. But
well, that's
thank
the
God
whole
the
thing. You know, again, losing your job, being the least of it, going to jail. I mean, you think about how much has changed.
Oh, yeah.
Most likely you're not going to lose your job for a lifestyle choice.
Right.
You know?
In some states that you still can.
Oh, of course. Well, you know, I don't want to sound like this, and you know me. I don't want to, but we know what states those are. And
of course.
States that I'm not going to vacation in. That's it. They're not going to get my money. But yeah, those states are states I stay very far away from.
Yeah, me too. They wouldn't like me very much.
They wouldn't like me. Let me tell you something. You and I going in there and having some tequila, forget it. End of story.
No.
You know what I'm talking about.
That would be the end of story. Yeah. I'm not going to do a book signing there. Can you imagine?
Oh,
please.
No. You know what? And that's the part of the dialogue that we have to say. We're not going to change everybody. The truth is, 20 years from now, there's still going to be a 10% of people that are not going to be enjoying our dialogue. And that has to be okay. It has to be okay. Them live the way they want to live. Yeah.
Oh, sure. You know, I just hope that by example, you know, or I hope some people read the book and it opens their heart. That's my goal. I want them to open their heart, to let them feel compassion and feel the love. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think an important part of the book, in addition to, of course, it being a love story, you have to look at how Hollywood treats women.
Yeah.
You know, the whole Beverly Kills, it's women have to look a certain way. And you're looking at the Gregory Peck, the Tyrone Power, the Rock Hudson, none of them had to be put on diet, none of them had to conform to a size or a shape that was brought about from Hollywood standards.
Yeah.
So how did Hollywood fail women in every which way?
The poster girl is Judy Garland.
Yeah, my God. My God.
So tragic. So tragic. You know, with the pills, you gotta lose weight. You gotta stay up. Uppers, downers, uppers, downers, and it screws you up. And with boy, you have to be the most beautiful, the most sexy. You can't age. Heaven forbid you should age. So, and it's too much pressure. Too much pressure on these people. It's a tragedy, and that's why the title of my book, Joy Lansing, A Body to Die For, because her trying to achieve the perfect body killed her. Really awful.
Do you think things have changed much? Let me ask you honestly.
No. Maybe a little bit. I still think the pressure is there. You can't get old. I mean, how many... Now, luckily, women are smart, and what they're doing is if they're successful, they're producing films for themselves in the good part, you know, for an older woman, you know, because if you don't do it, it's probably not going to happen for you. So, so women are smart. Women are so doggone smart.
And, we always have been.
Getting it. I'm sorry?
We always have been, but now it's a matter of we understand we could, you know, recreate the power. I mean, you look at Ida Lupino in the 50s. She had to subsidize her own films because nobody got her. Nobody wanted to fund her. And she did a lot of great things. And she had a lot of progressive guys, Rod Serling being one of them, always platforming her. But it was tough. It was tough. And, you know, and I'm hoping that the women that realize there is a little bit more of a breathing space and an opportunity for change and just go for it.
Oh, Yeah, women have given themselves permission to go
Exactly.
That's so great to see. Mm-hmm. Miss Witherspoon is one of them. She's dynamic. Nicole Kidman, they all have their own production companies. They're rocking.
Exactly. And, you know, I have friends that always say, why do we, you know, and I always accept people's pushback on things. Well, why is this one always saying about Black Lives Matter? Why is it always saying about feminists? Because we had to. Because if we don't mention it, it could disappear. It could dissipate. Yeah. Why? This is why we're doing it. And why is it a problem? Why is it a problem?
It has to be out in the forefront. Always.
Yeah.
People, I mean, look at what people's attention span is like a gnat. You've got to grab it and telling people so that, you know, and then the more it's discussed, the more there is more normalcy. You know, it's not freaky, weird, verboten.
I hear you. Let's talk about the fox.
Okay.
Because it's funny. I'm looking at seeing both movies probably within 2 weeks of each other. And I know the children's island. The fox, my opinion, and you tell me different because this is what this is about. The children's hour was more progressive, just because Audrey Hepburn walked away than the fox.
Right.
You tell me different.
No, you know, it was much more progressive. To me, the fox was like, it was like chiding you. You know, if you dare have a relationship, you're going to pay for it. Mm-hmm. You're going to pay, and you're going to be punished.
Right.
The ultimate punishment it was a tragic film. It's a tragic film. Their relationship was lovely, and then the fox comes in. I mean, Cure Delay.
Who was wonderful. He was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, he was. And the fact he became the hero to the story. You know, he saved this woman from a life of tragedy and sin and went off with the heroine, you know, and you get rid of the trash, you know, kill him off.
Now, see, this is what I took away from that. He got half a woman when he walked away with her. She was still in love with Sandy Dennis.
Yeah, she was.
So that's the one part of the movie that I said, you know what? He walked away. He was the mortal victor.
Right.
But She was still with her love, so I don't know if he actually walked away with anything.
No, he didn't. He didn't. Because her heart was still with Sandy Dennis.
Yeah. And that's what I was thinking. It's like I was trying to look at it from different angles, and I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I would not want to walk away from anybody who is still with somebody else.
No,
spiritually and emotionally.
That's, That's foolish because you don't have them. You really don't. It's all smoke and mirrors.
And that's what I thought was when I was watching it and that tree fell on her. It's just like, ah. And it seems so choreographed, and it just seemed so, again, it was a wonderful thing because you don't know if it was implemented. You don't know if it was something that the script wanted you to see as far as short foreshadowing, but that whole thing would hurt. She sits standing there and easily probably could have moved out of the way.
Yeah, that always confused me. I don't know if she was sort of self-sacrificing. I wondered. I really wondered, get out of, I kept yelling, get out of the way, get out of the way. And
absolutely.
She just stood there and goes, push.
A tree falls not that fast. She could have gotten out of the way. It's not like it's a lightning bolt. She could have moved out of the way very quickly. So again, what, the camera lens, what the director wanted to, import, that's a totally different story. But she certainly could have moved out of the way, I think.
I always question that. I'm glad you brought that up because it was so, to me, it was just like, why? Why are you committing suicide, basically? You're worried, that maybe it's best for Anne Haywood, and it was the self-loathing crap, that crap that is instilled in gay people. You need to hate yourself a little bit because, you're really not deserving of living or deserving of love or whatever. And you really need to, stand under the tree and do the right thing. Just do the right thing. It's how they wanted to... the message they wanted to send out to people, you're nothing, you're not worthy, and you need to give it up. I mean, that's my takeaway.
And I think what's interesting is, and you and I discussed this, it was so hard because I went on Wikipedia, I tried to do all my research. It was hard to say if they were a couple before this man was an interloper or they became a couple because he was, because there was so many different, there was a variant of they were just friends. And
right.
They just
I couldn't figure it out.
Thank you.
No, I didn't
know. It wasn't just me.
I didn't know.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Because the truth is, I watched the movie a couple of times, and I'm trying to think. The dialogue was not in concert with people with anybody who would have been a couple. So
right.
I don't get that.
Yeah, I don't either.
So it didn't make sense.
Either. Yeah, a lot of the stuff didn't make sense in that film, but I think. In reality, the Children's Hour had a better message. There was more clarification. The other, the Fox kept me, I walked away thinking, well, why? A lot of big whys. Why? Why would they do this? Why, what happened? It left me questioning.
Yeah. Well, and again, the Children's Hour, it was Lillian Hellman's, story. You had a lot more of literature that was intellectual and a lot of different angles to this.
Right.
So it's really hard to say. Again, the Fox was something that I think it was later on, it was 1968, you just dissect it and you get your own vision from it. And that's any art, it's subjective. So you just look at it and say, I got this from it. But as far as tonality, I think the Children's Hour brought it together as far
right.
as everything that we would want it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was brilliant.
Yeah, I think so too. And like I said, it's as hard as it is. And I look at, and I always say, I think Faye Banter won, I think she won the she won some sort of award for this. I think a supporting actress, I think she won
oh,
for
wow.
this. And she was just wonderful in that. You know,
yeah, she
made it right. Again, she had a granddaughter she was just trying to support and
mm-hmm.
a lot of money that funded the town, but yet she was a woman of conscience who decided,
yeah.
I want to be open. And at the end, when she realized her granddaughter created this groundswell of turmoil,
wow.
She was just wonderful in that. Yeah.
Oh, she was. Yeah, that was a very emotional part of the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Finally, the truth came out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the tragedy
exactly.
that happened, that those rumors, those god-awful rumors.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody played their part perfectly. And I'm going to
mm-hmm.
say, I don't want to dismiss James Garner, but he was the least of it. Everybody was just wonderful in this. I mean, from Karen
yeah.
Balkin, Faye Banter, of course, Audrey Hepburn and Shirley MacLaine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was,
yeah.
they were just wonderful and supportive and powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
So,
truly great.
And that's one of the films that probably made a dent in my life. And I always remember it. I always remember being in front of an Admiral 19-inch screen, black and white,
wow.
watching it with my mother. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Watching it with my mother and seeing that scene. And my mother putting her hand on my shoulder. Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Just really cool stuff. Just really cool stuff.
That's
and the stuff that you
absolutely.
Take with you, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, I've never forgotten the film. I mean, it's vivid in my
yeah.
mind. Yeah, because it impacted
yeah.
me. I was a young woman when I saw that. A very young woman.
How old were you? How old were you?
Oh my God. In my teens, I think.
Yeah.
Late teens.
Okay.
Maybe.
You saw it in the theater?
No, I saw it on TV.
Okay.
I can't tell you exactly how old I was or
mm-hmm.
or where I was, but I do remember watching it on television.
Wow. Yeah. It's one of those life-changing movies, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think at that point I wasn't aware or sure about my sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But it made me kind of. It made me question my sexuality. It made me think,
mm-hmm.
you know, it is sort of like a reality check, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, I understand why Shirley MacLaine is upset. I understand because she's in love with her. I understand
mm-hmm.
those feelings. And it's sort of like light bulb went on. Well, maybe,
yeah.
well, maybe you're. And so, you know, I started to figure things out a little bit. So, you know,
yeah,
it was, you know, I think it was life altering, you know, for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
I question. It was directed by William Wyler, who I don't really know what he went on to do after that. Honestly, I don't
uh-huh.
really know. But that was just, I think, a groundbreaking And I always say this, I'm very anti-Walt Disney because he was, you know, again, a communist, Nazi sympathizer. He had a lot of stuff. But if I had a goddaughter or daughter that wanted to see Snow White, Cinderella, I would never deny them that. But I would make sure we discuss it afterwards. And that's what art is. It's just discussing what you see. Although it's all subjective, just have, you know, sit down and have a dialogue about what you see, what they see, and import your vision of it. That's really it.
Exactly. I mean, you don't have to take that as your role model, and of course, you have to wait for the print. You have to do all this other stuff.
Yep. That's exactly it. You know, when I speak at women's gatherings, I always say the worst casualty of statistically is Walt Disney's "Someday My Prince Will Come."
Right.
And that's really it, because you're teaching your daughter that they have to wait for the kiss of the prince to wake up, or somebody to rescue them, and that's the worst thing you do for. And I'll go on spot by saying the worst thing that you could do for a little girl as well as a little boy, because you're putting pressure on the little boy to say they have to do this, and the little girl for saying you have to wait for this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there you go.
It's not on both, you know, male and female.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's stereotypical.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not there.
Yeah.
To put that kind of pressure on kids.
No, it's not. It's not cool at all. And you know what? The best part of this is when I watch TCM, and things that you watch is cringeworthy, because everything you watch is violating something, some stereotype. You're watching women being, you know, anytime I see Lucy being brought across Ricky Ricardo's knee and being beaten, I always say, you know, I know Desi Arnaz never did that in his household. This would never float. But this is what sold in the 50s. So
The
Lucy being bad.
Yeah, the obedient wife.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Have you seen some of those ads, those old ads in magazines of stories? You know, if you want to keep your man, you have to get your makeup on when he comes home. You have to have his hot meal ready for him, and you have to make sure the kids have had their baths and they're cleaned up and pretty and they're good. Make sure they're good, and don't they upset him. And let him relax and do whatever he wants. It's just like, give me a frickin' break.
you could curse, sweetheart. It's fine. You could say whatever you want.
Give me a break.
Wives and Lovers by George Jones. Wives should always be lovers too. Run to his arms, and it goes on to warning women about if he leaves your house and you're in curlers, you might lose him. And this was 1967, and it was a number one hit. George Jones, who has a beautiful voice, I'm not dismissing him as anyone who's you know, empowering to this. He just did the songs and got the royalties. But that was the message. If you're not a certain type of woman, there's danger.
You can lose your man.
You could lose your man. Watch out.
Yeah. And if you don't have a man, you're not a real woman.
You're not a woman.
You're half of a woman.
Yeah.
Unless you have a man. And that's not fair either.
No. That's exactly right. And most women are trained to be mothers. And I love kids, believe me. And I know you love kids. But it doesn't mean that motherhood is in your destiny. And that's what most women, I remember John's grandmother, who I love dearly, would say to me, may her soul rest in peace, you're not a mother? You don't want to have a kid? That's a sinner to God. And she would say that anytime she saw me. And you know what? We got along really well, but this was an issue that she always held dear to her heart. If you're a woman who could have kids and you're not, it's a sin to God. And that's what you're up against.
That was the mindset.
Yeah.
You have to get married. Even when I was growing up, you know, my parents were really cool in a lot of respects. There was no real pressure. You got to get married. You got to do all this stuff. You know, and it was sort of like, you know, we want to make sure you're taken care of. So, you know, find a rich guy or whatever. But, you know, that crap too. But, there was so much pressure in the media, in the advertising, television.
Yeah.
You had to be a dutiful little wife, the little wifey, the little Stepford wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep your mouth shut. Don't upset your husband. He's had a hard day at work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that crap.
And you didn't have the kids yelling and screaming and getting sick and having to rush him. Yeah, you didn't have any of that, of course.
Cleaning up his crap, you know. Well, let me toss his clothes on the floor. Stupid stuff. It was just the mindset, and women bought into it. That's the tragedy.
Yeah.
They
you know it's
it.
it's interesting.
And then, I didn't mean
to cut you off, but when women always say, well, you know what. This was the way it was. And I always say, you know what? Women had more access to their children and raising them differently. So why didn't we do the right thing? Because we were brainwashed. Women had more access to their husbands that were away. Oh, my God, how many hours a day? Why didn't we do the right thing? Because we didn't believe it.
No, we didn't. We believed. I mean, even in school. When I was in grade school, it was like males are much more important than females. That's the way, you know, if you had a son, you scored. If you had a daughter, well, you got to marry her off to a wonderful son. You know, somebody's son. You know, you're always second class. You were half of a person. You really weren't worthy. You know, males were worthy, females were accessories, necessary accessories for breeding, basically, and that's all it was, breeding and keeping the male happy. And that's not fair. It's not fair.
No. And, you know, the truth is what people don't realize is when you create a balance, you're creating a balance for both kids. Because I know if I had a son, I would not want a gold brick for a daughter-in-law. I would not want a son who's a lawyer and somebody who's sitting at home doing nothing. So the best thing is if you bring out the best in both, I would love a daughter-in-law who is, you know, just going out and doing this and doing that and being just a partner to my son. And vice versa. I would want a son who appreciated his wife.
Yeah, absolutely. Just not a necessity just for convenience or for procreating or someone to keep the house clean or satisfy your needs or whatever. Equal partners, you know, and a lot of men are wonderful and they treat their wives wonderfully.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But there are the others who don't, and that has to change. People have to be more respectful of each other. They have to realize that you're an equal. You know, a woman is an equal, she has to be part of the equation, not just you know, something you drag along.
Uh-huh. Amen. Amen, sweetheart.
Exactly. Exactly.
Amen, sweetheart. You know what? You and I with a couple of totes of tequila. That's forget it.
Hello.
Forget it. We have a 3-hour show.
Well, we certainly would.
Oh, my goodness. I want to also give a shout-out before we leave to you. Listen to the show I produce, Jazz Just After Dark, right?
Yes, I
do. Listen to it. Okay. So we have this wonderful jingle meister, Lynn Portis, who is going to, and I want you to listen to this week because it can be really funny, who is doing, we do a cocktail music pairing, and it's really cute because whatever we're doing, thank you, baby, we are. Yes.
Yeah,
so
I listen.
She said to me, you've got to get ready because it's going to be hot. So I'm ready. I have my fan. I have my spray that I could spray myself. And this is going to be what we do this week. And Lynn Portis, who does the jingles for us every week, Jazz Just After Dark, she's got a great website. And she's got this wonderful app that you could do a singing telegram with your phone. So if you break up with somebody, I'm not saying do this week, this way, but you could just happy birthday, happy anniversary, congratulations on your job, best luck, best of luck, all these things she has in her app, and there's a song for everything. And the song this week.
What song
this week is going to be Six on the Beach. So
I love it. That is so cool.
I even said to her, don't make it too hot because I don't have enough penicillin to hand out to the audience. So
the masses,
we got to be careful. So
yeah.
Her website is amuseapp.com. So go to her, listen to the array of stuff that she has, and it's just going to be amazing. So, Lynn Portis, we love you. We're going to hear you on the show on Friday night. But my lovely Alexis, give us a shout-out. You're going to be on with me for the next 2 weeks, so give a shout-out to your jewelry, too, sweetheart.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love it. I'm loving what's happening with my jewelry. I think it's going to get out there. Because it's my passion. I really love doing it. I'm excited. I'm on Etsy. It's Alexis Hunter Jewels. And I post stuff on Facebook all the time. So, but Etsy's a good place to find it. And I'm going to get my own website so people can go and check it out. Yeah.
Good. It's lovely stuff. A number of things that when you and I together, we're going to do some photo ops, and I'm going to wear them.
All right.
Oh, baby doll, are you kidding me? Oh, no, absolutely. Just wonderful, wonderful stuff.
Oh,
and,
thank you.
You know, of course, and it's just coloring out of the lines, and I love it. It's not anything. It's just very unique, and it's not anything that you would see anyplace else. So if you're looking for one-of-a-kind jewelry, this is it. This is it, really it.
Oh, you're so sweet. You're so thoughtful.
No, but
thank
it's
you.
True, sweetheart. It's true. It really is true. It's just wonderful stuff.
Thank you. Well, I love doing it, that's the good part.
What do you think we're going to tackle next week, sweetie pie? What do you think?
I don't know.
What do you think we're
going to
tackle?
the problems of the world. What else?
But
fun.
We'll think about it.
We'll have fun. We'll have fun dealing with all the crap.
We sure will. Do you want to do any other shout-outs before we leave the show, sweetie pie?
Oh, sure. I hope that your listeners will want to read my book. I hope they will. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and my publisher is Bear Manor Media, And mm-hmm. you can get the book at either, you know, either site. And it's an audiobook, e-book, and regular paper book, hard and soft cover. And it's mm-hmm. Joy Lansing, A Body to Die For, a love story. Thank you.
And it's available on audio, too, right, sweetie?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Okay. Because, I have a couple of friends that say, you know what, I don't read books. And that's fine. But, you know, most people, if they're driving and you could just listen to something as you're going along, I think this
yeah.
is wonderful. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that's the good part. It is an audio book and an e-book. If people don't want to actually hold a book, you know, they can have it on their phone or on their iPad or their computer and just read it that way.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. You know, again, mm-hmm. I love reading the New York Times. I like folding it on the train, and I like
okay.
smelling magazines. So I don't have a problem with that, but a lot of people do.
Yeah, they do. And a lot of people, you know, one of the hardest things is moving, and if you collect books, that's enough to kill
mm-hmm.
you.
Oh,
so people
baby
are
doll.
Downsizing. Yeah. They're downsizing.
Talk
and
to me about something
book.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah,
totally
you know.
Get what you're saying. I
welcome
totally know
to your
what you're
world.
Saying. Hello.
Hello, Lori.
You're going to be on with me next week, and it's going to be a day before your special edition release.
Oh, yeah.
So that's
going to
be kind of cool. So we're going to plug that. So it's going to be... the 24th, and you're going to be on with me for the 23rd, and we're going to push that, and it's going to be a wonderful thing, the re-release, a special edition of your book, which is going to be groundbreaking, sweetie.
Yeah, it's going to be, I can't wait for the next show. I'm addicted.
I can't wait, too. My God, we have another year to go, but next week is going to be great.
Wonderful. I hope everybody will listen. Everyone out there, I hope you'll listen in again.
And they will. And we're going to say goodbye to everybody on the West Coast, on the East Coast, and, of course, in the UK. Thank you for joining us. And join us here next week. You know, this lovely lady and I will be manning the mics and just talking about everything that is important in Pride Month and, you know, stuff that is just infused here and there. So, Alexis Hunter, thank you so much for joining us. And as I always say, of course, and as I always say after every show, my favorite quote from Mother Teresa is, if we have no peace, it's because we've forgotten. We belong to each other. So thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to be going home with Nina Simone. And everybody stay safe and just celebrate everything that matters to you. Alexis, I love you, and I'll see you next week.
I love you too, Laurie.